There are fewer than 30 men in the world qualified to drive Formula One. A mere half dozen, perhaps, to win. At this moment, I'm inclined to think you're not one of them.
No, you want to.
Keep up the good work, Stephen, and there you have it. There you go.
Hello, this is Desiree for F1Weekly.com. I'm your in-depth correspondent.
Let's go with the qualifying, Steve.
Welcome to F1Weekly.com. My name is Clark Rogers. I'm the host of the program. I'll be joined by Nasser Hamid, my co-host. This is podcast number 856, October 26th. 2020, Nasser.
Thank you, sir. I say 99 love balloons for Nina, 92 F1 wins for LCH, and the big question is, where have you gone, Tom Carnegie?
It's a new track record.
On today's program, I know, he's the greatest. Max challenges LCH to a car swap. Kimmy. He knows what he's doing. We have more from Gary Sloan in thepitlane.com. And quickly, I want to remind you that we need your contributions to keep this program on the servers. Just click on the Support F1 Weekly tab. You know you'll want to. Nas, welcome to the studio. How are you?
I'm doing pretty good, sir. Thank you. I'm trying to recover from a 14-hour drive. But I have to say, you know, it's hard to believe the dream team of Ross Brawn, Rory Byrne, the Red Baron, and Jean Todt are now part of history. And it's just an incredible achievement. And we've even dedicated a full podcast on this, so we won't talk too much about your favorite driver. And over the weekend, I was driving from FLA to Frederick, Maryland. And Mr. Rogers, Formula One is very important, whether you're driving or flying or whatever. Somewhere near South Carolina, if not Salinas, I had the immense pleasure of watching the race at a Cracker Barrel on my iPhone. And not surprisingly, Lewis was cooking and sending Bottas to the bottom of the performance barrel. Finishing 25 seconds behind your teammate is not what the doctor ordered. You know what they say by the saying? C'est la vie. Your brief synopsis on the race that pretty much we knew how it's going to work out.
Not an exciting race except for some moisture. Apparently, I think somebody sneezed. And it was just enough for soft tires to become sticky and for everything else to become slippery. That was exciting. Science had his 15 minutes of fame in Portugal, which is great, his neighboring country. Well, Kimi still has the machismo down in the bowels. He still can be Mr. Tough Guy. And for me, Kimi Raikkonen is the hero of Portugal. But yes, we know another record has been smashed. Keep up the good work, LCH, Mercedes, Toto. This is going to go on for a number of years, so I'm not going to get ridiculous about this. There it is.
Now, you have to say something about the track. Aren't you glad we're seeing tracks like this in Mugello on a Formula One weekend?
We all are happy with the track.
Yes, I've seen quite a few races at this track. It is very, very nice. But man, I'll tell you, the real fun was on the opening lap, and what a lap we had. Bottas passes Lewis to take the lead after Lewis led going into turn one, which was expected. And next thing we know, there are two McLarens in the top four with Sainz Jr. second. And like you said, Kimi Raikkonen, the real hero of Portugal. I mean, that was very impressive how he came up to sixth. Now, Mr. Max Verstappen, a lot was expected from him, but he tangled with Sergio, sending Perez spinning. And then we had Carlos Sainz Jr. leading the Portuguese Grand Prix. And like you said, 15 minutes of fame. And I knew that he was not going to win the race on a normal course of event. But it's good to see McLaren in the top five, both cars running in the points. So I'm very happy for the boys of MTC, McLaren Technical Center. I see podiums in the eyes of Ricciardo next season, especially as long as McLaren keep Paddy Lowe and Sam Michael away from the garage. Now, were you surprised? I thought Max, especially when Bottas took the lead, I thought maybe Max will pounce on Lewis also. But, you know, he was throughout the race not among the top cats, hustling and bothering the Mercedes drivers. Did that kind of surprise you, sir?
I don't know. Max is getting frustrated. He was focused on a clean race because it was a new track, which has a lot of turns. This is the opposite of Monza. So you got to focus a lot. And I don't know. Apparently, he was having a hard time with the setup on his car. And it took a while for his tires to get up to speed or temperature, whatever you want to call it. He was certainly struggling. No, I mean, the beginning, you know, the first 20 laps is pretty much, for me, the race. I loved every minute of that. That was exciting.
Yes, Sainz's 15 minutes of fame were over on lap 6 when Valtteri Bottas got back in the lead. But you know, my guts and my wonderful grits at Cracker Barrel were telling me when the checkered flag is coming out, number 44 will be the first car taking it. I think F1 will remain very predictable unless the second Mercedes carries number 33, and that will be some serious competition and pressure to the max for Mr. Lewis Carl Hamilton. But I do have to say, you know, it was very nice to see his papa, Anthony Hamilton, hugging and, you know, wearing a mask and Lewis thanking him. So that was all very good, all stuff. So that's nice. The sad saga continues between teammates at Ferrari. After 10 laps, Leclerc was 5th and Sebastian 15th. I have to ask you, are you holding any hope for Sebastian at Aston Martin?
No, to be honest with you. I mean, especially in a sense, they might be doing themselves harm by losing Sergio Perez. I'm serious. I mean, Vettel is now blaming Ferrari. Maybe they're not giving him an equal car, which is really the bottom of the totem pole kind of blame, which is the worst. That's a classic number two blame, and I just couldn't believe I heard it. So I have no idea what kind of car they're going to give him. Vettel better drink some magic juice. I have no idea, but he's really going to have to show Aston Martin that he belongs there.
Well, one thing is for sure, Charles Leclerc has put a spell on him. But, you know, I am hopeful that Sebastian will find his mojo. May not be winning mojo. Nobody's going to have winning mojo as long as this Mercedes and Lewis Hamilton package is there. But I am hopeful, and maybe he'll prove me wrong, that there is some life and racing life and fight left in Sebastian Vettel. So we'll have to see how it works out next year. And at least he don't have to worry too much about his teammate. And we'll see how it works out for the departed man, soon to be departed man, Mr. Perez. Now, Mr. Pierre Gasly had an interesting weekend. In practice, his car was on fire. In the race, the driver was on fire. The talk now is he will be part of the package if Red Bull goes back to Renault after Honda leaves at the end of next season. Apparently, rumor is that Renault wants him as part of the deal. Sainz Jr. also passed the racing point driver to get his kicks on the final lap on lap 66. I tell you, this is my take on Mr. Pierre Gasly, especially now that he's a proven race winner. I say keep that happy feeling and momentum going by avoiding being a super solid number two again at Red Bull. Proof is in pad thai, if not tapioca pudding. After 15 laps, Max was running third behind the Benz boys, while his teammate Albon was running 10th, almost 20 seconds behind. And on lap 20, normal service was restored when your favorite driver said bye-bye to Bottas. And that was pretty much the race for me in terms of who was going to win, unless there was a Malaysian Grand Prix style kablamo for Lewis Hamilton, and I'm glad it did not happen that way. Any thoughts on Lance Stroll, the lousy weekend he had? I'm sure you saw his trading paints with Max Verstappen over the weekend, and then also not a happy feeling between him and Lando Norris. Your take on Mr. Lance Stroll this past weekend?
I have to admit to myself that he's in Formula One because he has a B next to his name, nothing else. Running into Verstappen was bizarre in practice. And then what happened in the race, I mean, maybe he's just having a bad day. People forget he'd been out of the car since mid-September because of the COVID-19 and because he was ill. So, you know, Hülkenberg was on call once again this weekend. Luckily for Stroll that he didn't have to call him, but I don't know. I think Stroll maybe is losing interest. You know, and a lot of people, let's face it, folks. I mean, I know it's exciting to be in Formula One, but a lot of drivers, I know this sounds ridiculous, but they actually have dreams of becoming a Formula One world champion. And they know that it's not going to happen in their lifetime. And they have to accept it. And I mean, I feel terrible for George Russell, but much less Max Verstappen or any of these young people. There's no chance you're going to get a world championship in the next 5 years. So just relax and stop hitting other people.
Well, you know, I've known a few in the last 10, 15 years, I would say serious Rastafarians. And when you look at the... what you're talking about, Lance Stroll, you didn't say this, but I'm assuming you're talking about motivation or a desire to win or achieve something. I mean, it's hard to have a desire to achieve something when everything is handed out to you upon arriving in this world. You know what I'm saying? I mean, there is no let me get out of this situation by becoming a success in racing, as it was the case with Lewis or Kimi or Alonso and so many, and Schumacher, of course. So, yeah, I find it hard to believe. I mean, if you're in his shoes, how will you motivate yourself to succeed at anything?
I guess pleasing Papa and his girlfriend?
Yeah, Papa just bought a Formula One team. What he should do is just make Lance Stroll the team manager. He might do a better job there. Yeah, but you mentioned about George Russell. He is now saying the war of words have broken out. He's now saying that it's the Paris scam that has fanning this flame of rumor, because they want to put pressure on Red Bull that, you know, he's in demand. And you mentioned Hülkenberg. It's looking more and more likely that Albon will not have a seat at Red Bull after this season. That's what it's looking like. Surprisingly, one has to believe the rumor mill, the top two contenders are Sergio Perez and Nico Hülkenberg. If you were Dietrich Mateschitz of San Jose, who would you take, Sergio Perez or Nico Hülkenberg?
I'd get Nico Hülkenberg because he's got a lot of fire in his belly. He wants to conquer that demon. And I think he's actually better than we believe. To do what he did, just jumping in a car after having coffee with his buddy an hour away in Cologne, that's a lot harder than people understand. It's really very difficult. You actually have to have a lot of natural talent and know what the effing you're doing. And it impressed everybody. And that's why he's the talk of the town in terms of former Formula One driver coming back, which is always hard to do.
Well, why not get a guy who has been on the podium several times, came very close to winning a Formula One race. And I have to say, between both of them, both are very consistent drivers. They don't get into much trouble. And Nico Hülkenberg does have the advantage. He speaks the same language as Dietrich Mateschitz and Dr. Marco. But Dr. Marco knows only one language in simple English. Get in my car and win the race. And if you don't, then you got the machete coming down. Plus the team, you know, is based in England. And I don't think speaking the same language as Dr. Marco is going to help too much. We've seen how long they kept their own kind, Mr. Christian Kleen, at Red Bull. But it will be interesting to see what they are really hurting for, Red Bull. They have several drivers in the pipeline. Some of them are very talented. You know, this Yuki Tsunoda, this Liam Lawson from New Zealand. But they just don't have the experience to be brought into Formula One unless they want to turn him into another Jaime Alguersuari. So it will be interesting to see. Do you think Albon will be sent back to Toro Rosso or just Chop Chop?
Just Chop Chop.
I think they will bring in this guy, Tsunoda, Japanese kid, who is very quick. They have to keep Pierre Gasly. This guy is doing a tremendous job this season. I think he has new motivation after winning at Monza.
And he's a good driver.
Yeah, he's a very good driver. And he's been in the Red Bull family for quite a while too. And you know, a lot of people are very high still on Mr. Charles Leclerc. And if you compare him to what Sebastian is doing, Charles is obviously in a league of his own. So we'll see how far he will go if and when Ferrari gives him a car that can win while operating within the rules and regulations. Man, I was hoping very much that George Russell would get into the points. He was running in the points at some stage, but it was not to be. Hopefully, we will see him in the points this season. It'll be a good day for the team and also for him. Did you like the last few laps of dice between Mr. Perez and Mr. Gasly?
Yeah, that was fine. I mean, it was all dandy. I mean, that's all we have now is the fights for 12th and 5th and points. It's good stuff. I love it.
Yeah, well, something is better than nothing, you know. But I got to ask you this, man. I mean, this is 92 wins. Are we going to have 95 wins by the time the season is over?
I'm sure I'll be asleep by then, you know, completely lost in this whole thing. I mean, he's going to be around for a long time. It's going to go in the three digits. Who was talking about that today? I can't remember, but yeah, Max is going to be the one that's going to be the most frustrated. He's got to go up on that podium and be third or second. And, you know, after a few years, it's going to start getting to his gut. And I'm telling you, I mean, he's had a lot of coaching, and he's keeping it all inside. But that's building. That volcano is building up. And one day, I mean, he's trying to get a car swap with LCH. You know, he's dying to be on this on a competitive level with Lewis Hamilton. I mean, he's desperate for it. And it may never happen. I have no idea.
Yeah, you know, even with Honda, there was no guarantee if it was going to happen. But at least there was some hope, and there was some improvement, you know, and a few race wins here and there. But now as we speak, they don't even know what engine they will have. So I have to agree with you that his frustration is going to build up. He can be pretty hot-headed, as we have seen in press conferences a few times. But, and who can blame him, you know, with all that talent. And I was thinking, you know, after the race, that we now have like, well, you know, 20-plus races. If you put Max, or give him a package that Lewis has had in the last few years, and give him a Rubinho and a Bottas as a teammate, this guy can easily win, or any top-line talent. There are not many out there, but Max definitely does have what it takes to win at least 15 races in a package like that. And if you win 15 races each year, in 4 years, you're going to have 60 Grand Prix wins. So this number that Schumacher set, we never thought it will happen in our lifetime. But it did happen on Sunday, and this number that Lewis Hamilton is posting and is going to be adding on for sure, it can still be toppled if a young whippersnapper gets into the right car at the right time and just have 8 or 10 seasons of best package. I mean, nothing is not achievable. You know what I'm saying?
Absolutely. You know, it's all timing, the planets lining up. I mean, a lot of things have to go your way. Ask Lewis Hamilton. He'll tell you for sure. And he knows this. I think it's not just Max's father. I mean, it's everybody. A lot of people like Toto Wolff are desperate. They, you know, they would love to see that. And it's, I think it's frustrating for a lot of the top brass in Formula One that we're not seeing that big competition that we know is so possible. It's right there in front of our nose. Except that the system won't allow it. So I think that's the biggest frustration. How can we fix this system? I mean, obviously, Max in the right package will deliver.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. And we'll have to see what the Alpine ace will do when he comes back next year at the age of, how old will he be, 41, 42?
66, I think. They're, you know, him and Mark Martin are neck and neck.
Yeah. But, you know, it is possible, especially with Max getting into the right car, that we can see Lewis's record broken in our lifetime. Wouldn't that be something, Mr. Rogers?
Wow. It would be. I mean, have you been reading Yul Gibbons' book?
No, sir. Right. Lately, I've been on this Scott Speed program. I don't read books, but just lately.
I understand. I understand. See.
He really did say that in an interview. They asked him, what was the last book you read? He said, I don't read books.
I like that. At least it's honest.
Yes, very true. Anything else you liked about the race? Did you miss Nando since they were racing in the neighboring country?
I did miss Nando. I miss Nando every day. And you know, it's funny because it takes us back to the Schumacher days. And what made Nando so attractive to me was we were all bored with the Schumacher era and the winning and the records. It was like sleepy time, you know, where you know, don't even want to get up and watch the race because, you know, oh, he's going to let Rubinho win this week. And it got boring. All of a sudden, in 2005, this breath of fresh air came in the room and ended this domination all across the Formula One nation. And that's why Fernando became such a big hero and a big hit. He ended the domination from the Schumacher era. So maybe that's going to happen soon. Maybe something we need desperately is going to happen soon. I don't know. They say the pendulum swings. Sometimes the pendulum, if not oiled properly, will seize and stay in one spot.
Do you remember the dances and the moves he would make after winning a race?
Oh, absolutely. It was always a new dance or a new move. That's why Fernando is el machismo, because he broke the spell.
That was an incredible, incredible achievement. And when you talk about that, we have to mention again the San Marino Grand Prix 2005. Absolutely mind-blowing performance. But Mr. Rogers, one must also remember, if you ever watched the 2005 San Marino Grand Prix, the first few laps, and the first few laps of the Spanish Grand Prix, Mr. Kimi Raikkonen was the man in both races, but technical issues handed the championship to your hombre. But, you know, hey, ifs and buts don't count, so here we are. Shall we move on to points to ponder from Portugal, sir?
Absolutely, sir.
But before we talk about some back races, famous races. You know, Lewis is now, I think, 3 pole positions away from hitting 100. And this was his podium number 161. So, kudos to him. Okay, sir. Some of the memorable moments from Portugal. 1985 in the rain. A dramatic and shining moment for Ayrton Senna in the JPS Lotus as he takes his first Grand Prix win in an absolutely outstanding fashion. I was watching that race, sir, a few inches from the TV. I could not believe, I think John Bisignano was the commentator, and he said, and here is Michele Alboreto in the Ferrari, and shortly that, he was running like fourth, and shortly after that he said, and here is the race leader Ayrton Senna, and I could not believe, and there was a lot of racing to left, many laps to go. And I'm like, this guy is going to lap everybody. So that was an incredible performance. 1984, the year before, Niki Lauda finishes second to his McLaren teammate Prost to take the title by half a point. And this was the final race of the season that year. And I believe it was 1987 when Alain Prost won the Portuguese Grand Prix and broke Jackie Stewart record of 27 Grand Prix wins. And this was the race where ESPN, with 2 laps, just before, he took the lead like with 2 or 3 laps to go, and just before he took the lead, they cut away to Game Day America. Talk about football at 5 a.m. Can you believe that?
We are in America, sir.
Yes, sir, and that was the Heidi moment of Formula One. But life goes on, and sun did come up the next day. Okay, 1988. Unbelievable, watching this on live TV. Senna almost shoves teammate Prost into the pit lane wall. You remember that, right?
One of my favorites.
And Michael Schumacher did the replay of this on Rubinho in Hungary. I'm sure you remember that also.
You know, and we just kept laughing and laughing.
Yes, I remember Rubinho calling on his team radio, he should be black flag for that. And then we had my favorite moment. I think it was 1989. Arnage reverses in the pit lane, which is instant disqualification. But Il Leone let it all hang out, only to crash into and take out both himself and BFF from Brazil with the yellow helmet. And I just could not. I'm watching this race with two of my buddies, you know, and we're like, why is he racing Senna? And then we're also asking, why Senna not just letting him go, knowing fully well that this guy is black flag? But, you know, Senna was being Senna and Arnage was being Arnage, and they met in the kitty litter. But that's the way it goes sometime. Sir, would you like to see Portuguese Grand Prix at Portimão kept on the calendar?
I would indeed, sir.
Me too, sir. And it will be very nice to have this track. And I wonder if Dr. Miguel went there. I know I think they had cut down the number of fans. But hello to Mr. Dr. Miguel, and if he was there or if he can send us any update. And we shall certainly appreciate.
Keep up the good work, Nasser. So now, why don't we hear from Mr. Sloan?
Hello, listeners. My name is Gary Sloan, and this is this week's edition of In the Pit Lane. So last week, Kevin Magnussen and Roman Grosjean learned their services are no longer required by the Haas team. Grosjean told L'Equipe that team boss Günther Steiner had informed him that financially, Haas needs two pay drivers. And with that news, the rumour mill went into full speed, with Sergio Perez, Mick Schumacher and Nikita Mazepin all names in the frame. But the question is, why are Haas desperate enough that they may go with two rookies? Well, Haas finds themselves, like most of the teams on the grid, under financial pressure. And to understand their predicament, we must examine their income. So the team spends in the region of $130 million a year. And last year received $56 million of that from Liberty Media in the share of the monies distributed to the teams. Their sponsorship revenue was estimated at $83 million. This enabled the team to balance the book. Now, the first major problem is next year the teams will get approximately half the usual amount of money from Liberty Media because the revenues have fallen by that amount this year due to the pandemic. So for Haas, that's a potential $28 million shortfall. The second issue is the sponsorship revenue. Haas only has 8 sponsors. Contrast that to McLaren with 48. Watchmaker Richard Mille and clothing brand Jack and Jones each pay an estimated $5 million. It's believed the remaining sponsors pay a total of $10 million. This leaves Haas Automation picking up the tab as title sponsor, having to pay upwards of $63 million. So this may be keeping Gene Haas awake at night, as Haas Automation is vulnerable financially due to economies worldwide heading into or already in recession due to the pandemic. It's worth noting Haas sells these products in over 100 countries, and history shows us that the company suffers during recessions as customers cut back in capital expenditure. If we look back to the 2008 crash, Haas Automation cut its workforce by 30% with a loss of 400 jobs. To add to his worries, Haas has recently invested $27.4 million to purchase 279 acres of land in Nevada to build a new factory. So Gene Haas has always played the long game. He delayed Haas's entry into F1 by a year to allow the correct organisational structure and partners to be put in place. It was speculated that Haas turned down 3 offers for the team in 2019, with the bidders understood to be Mazepin, the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, and maybe Williams New Owners, American private equity firm Dorlaton Capital. So Haas decided to play the long game in 2019. Gambling on a new Concorde agreement with its fair share of revenues, budget cap, new regulations and the dilution fund, all increasing the value of the team from 2020 onwards. The gamble would have paid off had it not been for COVID-19 and the threat the pandemic poses to the finances of F1 and the wider global economy. The thing is, in relative F1 terms, Gene Haas is not a rich man, not when you compare him to the likes of Dietrich Mateschitz and Lawrence Stroll. Haas's net worth sits at an estimated $300 million. So what are his options? Sign 2 pay drivers and bank the money? Attract a new title sponsor to reduce Haas Automation's financial contribution? Or sell the team? While signing two key drivers will be attractive, as they will have the luxury of a transition year for Haas in 2021 due to a delay in the new regulations, resulting in Haas having little to lose running at the back of the grid, something the team already seemed to be resigned to doing. Finding a new title sponsor will be achievable, but it will be no doubt be at reduced rates. One option is to fulfil a long-held term goal to sign an American driver, which would be massively appealing to potential American companies, something that would also have Liberty Media salivating. In the frame is Colton Herta, the 20-year-old IndyCar driver. Although gaining a super license to drive an F1 may prove to be a major obstacle. Selling the team would be easily achievable, as we know there are buyers, witnessed by Claire Williams confirming several credible parties were interested in purchasing Williams. It's clear Belarus-born Russian Dmitry Mazepin, who owns the chemical company Uraclem, wants to purchase a Formula One team, having lost out previously at Force India and most likely at Williams. Mazepin's wealth is hard to pin down. Estimates vary widely between the two extremes of $1.8 billion and $7.1 billion. Either way, he has the money. Various media sources have already claimed that Mazepin has tabled an offer, which few teams would refuse. However, Haas has denied the possibility of a sale. What may prevent Gene Haas from selling it is if he feels Mazepin is trying to take advantage of the current situation, something that will not easily sit with Gene Haas. It's well documented Haas served 16 months of a 24-month prison sentence and paid a $75 million fine after pleading guilty to conspiring to commit tax evasion back in 2008. But it was not a simple case of greed. His motivation was to correct a perceived wrong. Haas had refused to pay license fees to the machine tool competitor Herkel, claiming he considered Herkel to have an invalid and out-of-date patent. A three-year dispute ended when Haas lost a subsequent court case and had to pay $8.9 million as settlement on damages. Haas told John Phillips, the company's former chief financial officer and eventual whistleblower, he was so angry that he vowed to recoup the millions of dollars he lost and blamed the government. Haas told Phillips that he was going to get back his $8.9 million with an additional $8.9 million as punishment by writing off his tax debt. So we know Gene Haas is a man who will take whatever action he deems appropriate. In the interest of balance, it's fair to state Gene Haas has an admirable track record of philanthropy since 2001 through the Gene Haas Foundation. So all will be revealed in due course, but the last word goes to a man who knew a thing or two about deals. Bernie Ecclestone, who once commented, "There's a lot of teams that if somebody comes along with the right check, they would sell. Not because they want to, but because commercially they probably think it would be the right thing to do." So that's it for another week. More details at inthepitlane.com. Till next week, stay safe, stay well.
Gary, keep up the good work. The check's in the mail. And don't forget to go to inthepitlane.com. Nass, I want you to get a glass of water while we take a quick break. So we'll be back after this brief message.
Hello, this is Christian Klien, and you listen to F1 Weekly.
Welcome back to F1Weekly.com. Clark Rogers here, your host. And now, as we spin the globe and go around the world with Motorsports Mondial and the king, the Swami himself, Nasser Hamid.
Thank you, sir. Now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, and Vitaly Petrov, we present...
Hit the road, Jack, and don't you come back no more, no more, no more, no more. Hit the road, Jack. And don't you come back no more.
That is the tune Gunter Steiner is singing to Mr. Grosjean and K-Mag. Hit the road, Jack. Don't you come back no more, no more. Sir, were you surprised that both these darlings of Gunter Steiner have been dropped by the Haas team?
No, I'm not surprised, and it's the right thing to do. They need to start with a clean slate. There's drivers out there anxious to get behind the wheel. Start these young guys, or, like I said, Perez could go there, Hulkenberg perhaps, but it looks like Schumacher may wind up there. I don't know, but for sure, you know, and I feel bad for K-Mag, but he can go to IndyCar. He'll be happy in America. We have all that Danish food. He could go down to Solvang, California, and feel right at home.
You know, that's exactly what I was thinking. Go to Solvang and feel all the Danish you want to feel.
Exactly.
Well, Mr. Steiner was pretty straightforward with Mr. Grosjean, saying, for financial reasons, I want you both out. How nice it is to hear that from our team owner. The Franco-Swiss driver has basically accepted his fate that life in F1 is over. Good news for him. Drivers wanted at Peugeot, if not Volkswagen, for their Le Mans program. And I will not be surprised if he shows up there and partner Sébastien Bourdais. Romain Grosjean came into F1 courtesy of Flavio Briatore and Renault driver development program. He is leaving with 10 podiums to his name, a lovely wife who used to be a reporter for TF1, Madame Marianne Joule. Very easy on the eyes, at least in the days she was seen in the pit lane. K-Mag does not have a big money bag, but is hoping for a miracle not on ice, but on shifting sands of Formula One. Apart from Haas, K-Mag has also driven for McLaren, where he scored a podium on his debut, and also Renault. Both he and Grosjean have one thing in common. Their first F1 teammate was Magic Man, also known as Machismo. K-Mag, like you said, is interested in crossing the pond and racing in Indy cars. His Pepito once drove for Roger Penske. I gotta tell you something, and I actually said this to a couple of F1 drivers who are now racing in the US. You know, next year, apparently the oval racing craze in America, at least for IndyCar racing, is pretty much over, and looks like it's affecting NASCAR also for whatever reasons. And next year, I cannot believe NASCAR will have 6 road races. What does that tell you, Mr. Rogers?
That occasionally they like to turn right. They've been fidgety about it. But yes, it's weird, but I don't know why, but it could be that some people in the South got adjumicated.
Adjumicated? Yeah, no kidding. Yeah, I can say a few more things, but I'll pass for some other time.
Thank you.
Yes, you're welcome. De nada. I think I mentioned that Jan Magnussen drove for Roger Penske in IndyCar racing once upon a time. Now, windmills of your mind are playing games with George Russell, as rumors are spinning that we already talked about, that he may be on the outside looking in. Simon Roberts from Williams was in the pre-race press conference, and he would not comment on the team's drivers next season. And you know, these days they are doing interviews by Zoom and all that, and he was really getting agitated when being asked about, what is your driver? One guy asked him if he can confirm his driver lineup for next season, and he was very uncomfortable with that. So we'll see. I thought it was a done deal that Sergio Perez will go to Haas, and I think he will fit in there well. They do serve good Tex-Mex food at Haas F1, but now, who knows, he might end up at Williams. Where do you think Sergio will go?
You know, he could go anywhere because Red Bull could pull the trigger on it. It's tough, but I don't know. I can't guess anymore. I'm tired of guessing. All I know is LCH is the winner.
Of which race?
All of them.
There you go, any race, huh? Okay, sir, now we move on to IndyCars from St. Petersburg. I mean, I thought of going there, but what's the point? You know, you cannot talk to any racing people, so I said, why don't I just drive to Maryland? So here I am. So they were racing 20 miles from where I live. Penske pilot Joseph Newgarden is the race winner, while Kiwi Scott Dixon takes third and the title. Mexican hombre and very impressive young driver Pato Ward was second for McLaren. This kid is the future Machismo of IndyCar racing. You know, he, I think, also is on the record books now as the fastest hiring and firing, or fastest hiring and let go at Red Bull. They picked him up last year, put him in a couple of Formula 2 races, didn't work out, and threw him in a couple of Super Formula races in Japan, didn't work out, and he was back here in the US within a few months. But he's very talented, and I think he's tailor-made for IndyCar racing. And of course, we are always happy when a young whippersnapper comes in and does a very good job. Now we go to Viva España, MotoGP from Aragon. A winner was Franco Morbidelli for Yamaha. And the Spa 24 Hours race, which I would love to attend one day, Mr. Rogers, Porsche was the winning car driven by an international crew. Local yokel Lawrence Venture, Nick Tandy from UK, and Kiwi Earl Bamber. Okay, Mr. Rogers, this has nothing to do with racing. I was looking at some sporting newspaper, news information and stuff like that, non-motor sports thing, and I saw this quote, and immediately it came to my mind that maybe the new owners of Williams, this is part of our famous last words, so I'm thinking that maybe the new owners of Williams told Claire Williams, as they were opening the door for her after the Italian Grand Prix at Monza, these wonderful words were apparently once said by a former Brooklyn Dodgers. So you know it's a very old saying when they say Brooklyn Dodgers owner, Mr. Branch Rickey. Have you ever heard of him?
No, but I'm not a big Brooklyn Dodgers fan.
Yes, you're just a draft Dodger fan, correct?
Exactly.
Thank you very much. Okay, he said, and I quote, "We finished last with you. We can finish last without you," end of quote. Talk about sporting spirit.
But that really nails it.
I thought it was beautiful. We finished last with you. We can finish last without you. Very motivating for the team.
Very motivating. That's what we need more. Good American baseball trivia.
Yes, sir. Whatever it takes. Where is the next race, Mr. Rogers?
Our favorite track where Fernando did the chop-chop on the former Dominator.
Now, yes, and the following year, the roles were reversed. You know, I've been to this track, sir, and what a beautiful track this is. You know, what the cool, you know, that thing there that's called Acqua Minerale, how this thing comes down, it's pretty steep dive, and it goes up to Alta Variante. If anybody goes there, check out this part of the track. It's beautiful. It's pretty much in a residential area, kind of like Indianapolis Motor Speedway, not too far from houses. And what was really cool, that inside the track, there is a school. And it's just, wouldn't you like to go to like third grade, surrounded by a fabulous Grand Prix racing track?
I would.
And you know, if you look at YouTube, there is also, you know, this thing that comes up, Alta Variante, the car comes up and they turn right and like a dog leg and go towards, I think it's Rivarsa, whatever it is called, heading towards the final turn, you know, to go to the main track, main area. If you look at YouTube, there is a video from the late 60s with Jim Clark when the Alta Variante was just straight. And it's such a beautiful scenery to see his car go through that track at high speed. And I will highly recommend if anybody is interested in that. And who do you think is going to win there, Mr. Rogers?
I hate to say it, but they've already made the trophies for Lewis Hamilton for the next like 16 races. But Bottas always has hope. So innocent.
Do you remember some years ago when Lewis won the championship, and then all of a sudden, even he himself said at the U.S. Grand Prix when he finished second, I think this was the time when Rosberg won four in a row, and they asked him at the U.S. Grand Prix, and Lewis's response was like, "My main job is done." I mean, I hope he does the same thing now to make Bottas feel good. Because, man, let me tell you, you get on pole. You know, they said during the telecast that this was the second race weekend in a row where Bottas was fastest in all three free practice sessions and then got beaten to the pole and beaten in the race. But whether you are on pole or you're starting second, if you get beaten by a teammate by 25 seconds, that has to destroy you inside, regardless of what happy face you put on.
Knowing that you're in the best car on the grid, for sure. Everybody knows that's the car everybody wants to be. That's the car Max wants to be in, but he's not. So Bottas, you know, he's got the car. He just has one damn problem.
He can't find the brake pedal or the accelerator.
He gets them all mixed up, you know, and that flickering light is back. It's a mess.
Oh, yes, that flickering light. Yeah, that's the way it goes sometimes.
But he's a nice guy.
That he is, very nice and classy.
at least his mom will be proud of that.
Yes.
Exactly. So keep up the good work. We know who's going to win. I guess it's really a moot point nowadays, but it is a beautiful track. I want everybody to pay attention. You know, maybe we can get this track back on the calendar as well. But this is a great, great racing venue for sure.
Yes, sir. So we shall see what happens at the San Marino Grand Prix.
Exactly. And once again, I want to thank Gary for another outstanding job. I want to congratulate LCH one more time, and we'll be doing that for the next few years, but that's okay. I've got a canned answer. But nevertheless, the fun now is where all these drivers are going to wind up next year. That's going to be fun. And who knows? I'm waiting for somebody else to test positive for COVID-19 so we can see Hulkenberg again.
Oh boy, that's very kind of you.
I'm a nice person, deep down. Our president had COVID-19. No big deal.
Okay, Mr. Pence, you've made your point.
I want to thank everybody who listens to this program. We'll talk to you next week. I'll see you at the hot dog stand.
Thank you. Bye-bye.